I don't know. Maybe this is a mistake, Derek. I might be lighting a fuse here, but I saw something right before I hopped on with you. I know you're already close, given the text message exchange we had last night about the way this week has played out for the Padres, which included some colorful language that we can't share here on the podcast.
Oh, come on, it's a podcast. It's like it's true. Can you give a darn?
I'll text the bosses and see if they approve. It was a term I'd never heard before, and I might have to add it to the rotation. I was looking at the votes for MVP, and somebody had Fernando Tatis Jr. 10th on their ballot.
Mm-hmm.
10th.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sure. And that person will never be voting again for anything ever, right? That's a person who votes. That's probably the same person who votes for Kanye West for president. Okay.
My initial thought was this person either hates bat flips or has very strong feelings about etiquette when you're facing a 3-0 count.
Or absolutely no concept of how baseball is played and therefore should not have any kind of a vote for a major postseason award.
Yes. That was curious. All right. Before we get any further, we give you the runway to share your thoughts on the way the final week of award season in Major League Baseball is going. Hello, On Fire Podcast, Derek Togerson, Darnay Tripp. Thanks to OGs, the sponsor of On Fire, celebrating their 30th anniversary. All locations have enhanced patio dining for guests, adding spaces, tables. Some have even added outdoor TVs. They've got new menu items. You know what sounds good right about now? The short rib sandwich, Scottish ale braised short rib. We're off to a good start. Caramelized onions, dill horseradish aioli, provolone cheese on ciabatta bread served with our McGarvey's Scottish ale gravy. Think of OGs.
Horseradish, I think, is underutilized, just kind of in general.
Big horseradish guy?
If used properly, it can definitely be something that adds a nice little kick to several different dishes.
Yeah, it does pack some punch, that's for sure. Think of OGs whether you want to come in for a bite or for takeout and delivery. OGs is selling beer to go. Two things we want to get to in this episode of On Fryer. Thanks, as always, for being with us. Award season, now over. Recording this about 15, 20 minutes after Freddie Freeman wins National League Most Valuable Player, which wasn't a huge shock. And our free agency wish list, the guys that are out in the market. Last week's episode, we talked about Padres now heading to the market and guys we would prioritize in terms of who AJ Preller should want to bring back, put the effort into being back in Brown in 2021. This episode, we're going to turn our focus to the guys that are out there on the market that we think could fit with this club. But first things first, and Derek, I tried to warn you about this last week.
No, you did. No, you're right. You were absolutely right. And I didn't want, maybe I was in delusion land and just didn't want to believe it.
But, and it wasn't, this wasn't, you know, my genius or knowing how this was going to go. This was just, it started when we spoke to Mike Petriello, a couple months back now, end of the regular season. And especially when he mentioned Devin Williams to win NL Rookie of the Year. And we were thinking, because of the first month and a half that Cronenworth had, that was his award. And kind of like Tatis, a slow September, and Williams did enough in the eyes of voters to catch up. And then when you think about what the Marlins did, Don Mattingly, the season they had, again, thinking Tingler could be the guy just with the turnaround that they had and certainly deserving just in terms of what he did. But from a national perspective, I started to think, you know what? Seems like folks out there see this thing a bit differently than we do.
And it's really hard. I don't want to be that guy who says, oh, it's just the East Coast bias. It's the But then when you tell me somebody put Fernando Tatis Jr. 10th on an MVP ballot, you have to think that there are a lot of people out there who are simply not paying any attention. You know, I mean, look, the kid who won it in the Rookie of the Year, I think the Rookie of the Year is the most egregious, right? Because of what Cronenworth did and the different positions he played and how much he had to rely on that guy. He hit him up and down the order. He was stellar defensively at multiple different spots. He, you know, carried the offense at times, even with the offense as good as the Padres were, even if it was for short stints. For him to lose out to a relief pitcher is, especially in the daily, you know, the day of analytics, where, you know, war is not the friend of the relief pitcher. It's, and I know they're being utilized more and more, but it blows my mind that that's the one that they would, you know, yank away from the Padres. And you have to think they're just not paying attention to what's going on out here on the West Coast. They're simply not. Maybe they don't want to. Maybe they're too stupid to. Maybe they're, you know, just they just don't want to because they don't believe that what the Padres did was legitimate. Who knows? I don't know. I don't want to speculate too much because I always get mad and start using the words we talked about in our text conversation. But, and then the second one would be Jace Tingler. And we talked about this last week on the podcast. Yes, Don Mattingly did a fantastic job. Don Mattingly also already had his club. He's been there before. He was not a rookie manager having to go through a pandemic who then took them to the highest single season winning percentage in the franchise's history. That's not what that was. Mm. It just kind of blows my mind the way that the people looked at it. And I don't know, man. I mean, wouldn't you also say that maybe a skipper should be somewhat responsible for the vast majority of his locker room and his clubhouse not getting COVID, because he's got to be, you know, have more control over what's going on over there? I don't know. That Tingler would be the second biggest. I wouldn't say that Machado was a snub, because I mean, Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts, you can't argue against either one of those guys. It would have been a bonus if Manny won the MVP.
Yes. Just in terms of voting, Betts was, Freeman ran away with it. Betts second, Machado third, Tatis a pretty comfortable fourth. Couple second place votes, 16 third place votes, and a 10th place vote. We talked about it last week a bit, how if ever there was a season that you would recognize the efforts of a Padre, it would be this season in Fernando Tatis Jr., just because of all the publicity he got. And so I would think, my guess would be, if you are just a casual viewer, if you're kind of halfway paying attention, you're seeing this kid in promos, you're seeing ESPN stories, you're seeing most exciting this or that, you're seeing videos being shared on social media. Same thing with the Gold Glove race. For him not to be in that, it just seems like he would be the type of player that would kind of be the lazy pick to get more MVP votes, to get to be a finalist for Gold Glove. That's kind of been the strange thing for me. It's not like it's the San Diego market are the only ones that noticed kind of the subtle contributions of this guy. There's nothing subtle about the season he had and the way it was covered, even nationally. And so I think that's what's kind of caught me off guard with some of the snubs that we've discussed with him. And I think you're right in that, I mean, Machado wasn't going to win most valuable player. I mean, it was clearly one of the top two guys, and it seemed like, you know, it was going to be Freeman. And sure enough, that was the case. He was kind of seemed to be the smart money. You do make an interesting point. I mean, the whole COVID thing, that's a feather in the cap of Tingler and the club, right? The fact that they handled it They took it so seriously. The players took it so seriously. They had this very direct message and did the right thing all season. And I mean, Mattingly is kind of being rewarded for his guys going through what they went through and, you know, coming out on the other side as successfully as they have. And so I don't know how much people, I haven't looked into it. I don't know how much people are talking about that, but it's worth pointing out, I think. And I do agree, you know, Cronenworth was the one that you felt had the best odds and would be the biggest snub because of not just his contributions offensively. Alec Bohm had huge numbers, but I mean, Cronenworth played all four defensive positions, although one game at third base, did a more than admirable job across the infield. The way he filled in for Eric Hosmer, that was kind of his coming out party. He contributed in such a major way for this club, and there's certainly arguments to be had about the role of a reliever when it comes to these awards. Just like there have been in the past about DHs winning MVP, because your contributions are more limited. And in this case, I mean, Cronenworth played more than any of those guys, obviously put up really impressive numbers across the board. But the fact that Williams was as lights out as he was over the course of 27 innings, only giving up one run, I guess was enough. And following just kind of the national folks on Twitter, they, you know, they seem to be on board with it. So, yeah, I don't know what to make of that.
And we're on the bitter train right now. You know, we're squarely sitting here on the bitter train, and we're going to be here for quite some time, because you got a team that had that kind of a run with that many stars on it, playing that well, doing as well as they did. You would think that they would get some kind. I mean, yes, Manny and Fernando, they both got the Silver Slugger awards. That's fantastic. But they're, and AJ Preller is going to win Executive of the Year, and that's all fine and dandy. But those are the ones people remember. Nobody remembers how many Silver Slugger awards anybody won. They know how many MVPs people win. You know, they know how many Cy Young awards people win. They know how many times you win the Rookie of the Year, and we can only win that one once. But the Manager of the Year award, they remember who the Rookie of the Year was. You know, it's named after Jackie freaking Robinson, for crying out loud. It stings and it hurts, and hopefully it puts lights to that. As you say, we're all looking for little slights to work harder over the off season. So maybe it's one of those. It gives you one of those perceived slights that the Padres players can now latch onto and go, no, you know what? We're making sure this does not happen again next year.
What's interesting too is, you know, Devin Williams did what he did in a relatively small sample size in the season that was the ultimate small sample size season, and so maybe voters saw it and thought, everything's weird about this year. You know, we're not getting a real complete picture of what anybody is capable of this season because we're only playing 60 games. What the heck? Why not give it to the guy who, in his limited body of work, was as fantastic as he was? So who knows? You know, we're trying to figure out the logic that goes behind this, and it's hard to do without talking to all the voters.
Get him on the phone. Everyone, we're going to be like, remember the end of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, when they all go to find all the people who were talking trash about him online? They fly to every single one of their houses. Let's do that.
And we'll start with the guy that had Tatis 10th on his ballot, because that is
you can't call yourself a baseball expert or even a baseball professional and do that. You can't do it. That's indefensible.
You must really hate bat flips. I mean, that's just my assumption. You really, really hate bat flips.
And if that's the case, you shouldn't be voting anymore, because that's what baseball is. That's what should have been for a long time. That's what it's become. That's what it's going to continue to be. And if you can't freaking get on board with that, go away. Stop ruining our fun.
Do you want to get to the free agency? Did you see that? Also, there's another piece of news today. You see the news about Glenn Hoffman?
Yes, Hoffy. Gonna, you know, not walk away, really. He's going to the front office. But after 15 years of the Padres, 22 years as a big league coach / short time as a manager, he had a winning record as a Dodger manager, actually, for a short time. Again, small sample size. But he's going to go to the front office, calling his bench coaching career, third base coaching career over. And, man, I look forward every spring training to talking to Glenn Hoffman, because he's just such a good, jolly guy. He loves the game. The Padres kept him here since the Bruce Bochy days. And he's been able to be around for that long. It's just, he's such a great dude. Wish him nothing but the best. Hoffy, congratulations on a wonderful, wonderful on-field career. And now he gets to go join his brother in the front office and player personnel. And he's got an eye for the game. And one of my favorite stories about Glenn Hoffman, and I ask him this for the last 5 spring trainings or so, I'll always make sure I find him, because he's had the same fungo for more than a decade. And he doesn't break him. He hits the ball so pure and so flush. And that man hits a lot of fungos. I mean, darn it, you've been out there, you watch spring training. He is hitting, I mean, every day. It's an hour or more of him just hitting fungos. Those things will most coaches will break 2 or 3 throughout the course of a season. Just because they miss hit it or get mad and slam one down, you know. He's had one for more than a decade, the same bat. And then when they went to the brown uniforms, he had it painted brown just because he wanted to keep that same fungo going. And the fact that he could hit it that flush and that pure for that long, is just, that is an absolute miracle to me. He's just a great dude, Glenn Hoffman.
I assume that's going to be like in a glass case in his office or hanging on the wall somewhere.
I would hope so, yeah. I mean, that thing's like the Wonder Boy of fungos.
Did you ever see, I think it's the Tiger Woods iron where, you know, an old club he used to use, that there's just one groove, one ball mark, and it's just from hitting it pure every single time, again and again and again, in the same spot. I'm guessing the fungo might have a slight dent in it just from that one spot where he hits it pure every single time.
And people don't realize how hard that is. They do not comprehend how difficult that is to do.
Because it's like swinging a Sharpie. I mean, that thing is, it's not your normal baseball bat.
No, I mean, it's made for hitting fly balls, ground, made for hitting infield, because you're not hitting anything. It's thinner and longer because you're not hitting anything that's coming at you. You're just tossing it up. But still, over time, you're going to hit a couple on the handle. You're going to hit a couple on the end. You're just going to get mad and slam one against the side of a cage. You know, that's just what happens. And it never happened. It's astonishing to me.
All right, let's get to our Padres free agency wish list. And we each came up with some players and assigned them a baseball comp. Who's a home run? Who's a double? Maybe who's a strikeout? Who's a balk? You know, who's
I didn't get any balks. I didn't think that far into it, so that's my bad.
Who's a ground rule double? No, I don't have any balks either. But so yeah, we're going to go through a list of names. I'm sure we haven't compared lists, so I'm sure there's going to be some overlaps here. But I'll go ahead and get started with the guy I think is probably like the obvious, you know, top of everybody's list, Trevor Bauer, right? I had Trevor Bauer in this cycle as a 3-run homer. I'm not convinced he's a grand slam just yet. Clearly he would be a huge get. And I think the fact that there's chatter about him going to the Dodgers makes it like even more so, like from a, you know, 2-run homer to 3-run homer. I mean, you want to help yourself by hurting the other guys too. He had an incredible season, and the Padres obviously need to bolster that rotation. I don't know that they necessarily need to go ace hunting. Given that Dinelson Lamet was fourth in Cy Young voting and you expect Mike Clevenger back, you hope that Chris Paddock returns to form and you've got a pretty solid 1-4. You certainly need a fifth starter, and Trevor Bauer would not be a fifth starter. He would be much higher in the rotation than that. But certainly a great pickup. You wonder what the contract would look like. Would it be a 1-year deal? Would it be, you know, somewhere in the 2-4 range? Lots of questions about what he's going to look for and obviously where he'll end up. But he's a guy that I'm not ready to call it a grand slam acquisition, but would be pretty close, especially when you take into consideration their continued pursuit of the Dodgers and the ability to keep another big piece from landing in LA.
Yeah. I looked at Trevor Bauer as the obvious one, right? Like he's the guy. He is the guy, no question. He is the guy. So I went about putting together some of these, basing it on two things. One, there is going to be a DH next year. I'm just going to assume and roll with it with that. And two, I'm trying to find some kind of maybe hidden gems or maybe guys that people aren't thinking quite as much about as possibilities. So assuming Trevor Bauer is going to be out of your price range, I landed on two starting pitchers. Starting pitching is going to be it. And I'm thinking I landed on two starting pitchers. One is James Paxton, who's 32 years old and great, but also very injury prone. So I kind of threw him off. And the other guy I looked at is, how about 37-year-old Charlie Morton? I know he's been kicking around the idea of, not re-signed by the Rays, kicking around the idea of retirement, but he had a 7 WAR this year, and he is a big time, big game postseason pitcher, and you wouldn't need him in this rotation to be that number one guy. So for me, sign a guy like Charlie Morton to just even a 1-year, maybe a 1-year deal with an option, something along those lines, not going to be too terribly expensive, brings you all kind of experience, all kinds of professionalism, good clubhouse dude, lots of postseason experience, obviously. Big game, Charlie. I would bring it. I think that's a 2-run bomb for me. If you could go out and get, say, hey, listen, come do it one more time. You had a ton of fun with Tampa last year, taking them to the World Series. Come do it in San Diego one more time. I would love to bring in a guy like that to add to that starting pitching staff.
Let's stay with the pitchers. I have two more guys. One I'm going to call a bases loaded walk. And to me, that's Taijuan Walker.
Interesting. A little reclamation project.
Yeah, you're going to be able to get him on the cheap. Came back from Tommy John this year, 2.70 ERA. Had really the best numbers of his career. He's only had 3 seasons where he's started more than 25 games. But comes back really strong, had a one-year deal with Seattle and then got dealt to the Jays. So now back on the market, and I think the potential that he showed, he was a bit hit or miss, you know, the first few years of his career, came to Seattle with a lot of promise, a lot of excitement, maybe didn't quite meet expectations, goes to Arizona, puts together a solid season, before the Tommy John deal. So I think he's a guy that, still fairly, only 28 years old. Tommy John behind him. If he can continue that form, I mean, that's a guy you're getting on the cheap. That could at very worst, you know, be a number four, number five. And if he pitches anything like he did this season, I would think you would like that addition a lot. So I think just in terms of value, for the pitchers that are on the market, he could end up being, I think, one of the better grabs.
I like that. I actually like that a lot. I like finding those kind of guys who were maybe not thought about all that much. Obviously, I mean, we've seen him against the Padres, and he was with Seattle. And he's, when the stuff is good, the stuff is great. And you just don't know if he's going to be able to replicate something like that. So I like the idea. And I looked at a guy kind of like that as well, and a guy like Mike Leake. How about the Fallbrook High School native?
Yeah,
bring him back. I mean, he's dinged. Free agent. I mean, he was injury prone, didn't pitch in 2020. You could probably, again, get him on a very team friendly type of deal. Almost like a prove it kind of contract. He opted out of 2020 due to COVID concerns. He'd been sitting there for a year and he's now a free agent. He was with Arizona and said, I can't play. I'm not going to play. It's a health thing. So he's going to be coming back and looking for something. He might be well rested. He might be a guy you can look at and go, okay, you know what? Let's see what you got and see how rested you are. Let's see if you can make sure, knock some rust off and bring him back into the fold. Because again, you're 33 years old, should be rested. Local, you know how I love my San Diego kids. Local guy who can come in and maybe give you something as your fourth or fifth starter. I think that I'd be totally good with that.
I've got a guy who last night I wrote down infield single, but I feel like that might be shorting him a little bit. We'll say there was a man on third. Corey Kluber, 34 years old.
You're opening a huge can of worms with Padres fans if you start bringing up Corey Kluber.
didn't pitch this season, shoulder tear. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, obviously anytime somebody's coming off an injury, there's a point of concern, but as he gets later in his career, basically having the year off, might not be the worst thing. And we know how steady he's been through the course of his career. 2019 being an exception, but a short season for him. Wouldn't you like a guy like that? 200 plus innings, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 straight seasons to round out that rotation?
If he's right, yes. Again, if he's right. And again, you got a guy who's got a lot of tread off of those tires, man. Mm-hmm. And I know the Padres tried to get him. They had him and they gave him away for what amounted to be Ryan Ludwig. And then he whined his way out of Petco Park when he realized that he actually have to hit the ball hard here to get it out. That was, back in 2010, at least you had to. And then he became Corey Kluber. Mm-hmm. And then you bring him in. It always kind of reminds me of the kinds of moves that the Padres would make like in the mid 2000s, where they would get Greg Maddux 4 years too late, and they get Mike Piazza 4 years too late. It feels like one of those types of moves where you're going out and getting Corey Kluber 3-4 years too late. The same thing would be if they brought in like Cole Hamels, which I've actually seen floated out there as a rumor that they'd go out and get another, the Rancho Bernardo High School kid, go out and get him. He's 37. When he was in, he pitched okay last year. So I could see them maybe doing that. But I thought right along those lines, though, again, kind of like a Charlie Morton, an older guy who obviously can still throw. And I know it's not going to happen. So I'll call this you reach first because it's strike three and the catcher drops the ball and goes to the backstop. So, swinging third strike and you get on for an error. But how about Adam Wainwright? Obviously, the dude, he's 39. He saw him in the postseason. He can still throw. But I don't think he would ever play anywhere outside of St. Louis now. And I'm sure the card, him and Yadi Molina, he's another guy who was a free agent. They're Yadi re-signing with St. Louis he's never leaving there. I see Wainwright is kind of the same guy. But what if the Cardinals just, you know, say, you know what, hey, we're sorry, we need to move on. We over a 60 game season when you're 39, that's fine. Over 162 game season when you're 40, maybe we're not sold on you, so we're gonna have to try and move on. I would throw a flyer out there for a guy like Adam Wainwright simply because of the track record and what he showed he still had in the playoffs against the Padres in the wild card round.
And you mentioned getting guys, you know, maybe a couple years too late. I mean, the good thing about where the Padres are, you know, it's not like last season we're talking about Mad Bum and we talked about Cole Hamels and some of these other guys as critical pieces in this rotation, not knowing what it would look like, not knowing that Lamet would be what Lamet is this year. And on the flip side, not knowing the struggles that Paddock would have, obviously not knowing that they'd pick up Mike Clevinger. They're in this position now where you're not necessarily relying on somebody to go and be the workhorse, be a number one or two guy, you know, have to rely on them to that extent where the expectations are so high. They're just coming in to provide, maybe it's leadership, provide a steadying kind of influence, especially kind of towards the back of the rotation, some depth, which we saw late in the season was a struggle for this team. And so maybe that takes some of the edge off a little bit, you know, when you're looking at some of these veteran guys, just the fact that, you know, they don't have to come in and be the guy, be the star. They can fill their role and that could be enough to help the Padres take another step, I guess.
I can totally see that. I could totally see that.
I got a few outfielders. First, we'll start with George Springer. I had him as a bases loaded double. Obviously, the upside with him is his postseason track record, right?
Right.
World Series MVP. He's done it. You figure this team is going to be back in the postseason for the foreseeable future, and can't hurt to have a guy like that on your side. There's a few different factors. I mean, the price, you know, I would guess he's one of those guys that is going to demand a decent amount of money. And so, you know, how much are the Padres willing to pay? That's obviously one of the questions, that they'll have to answer, that'll factor into, you know, how aggressive they are in the market. But, you know, a guy that's been pretty steady throughout the course of his career. You know, he's got the accolades, he's got the experience. I don't know, you know, the Houston thing, the whole Astros dynamic, you know, it's not Bregman and Altuve. You know, those guys seem to be really at the center of kind of the controversy, but a guy coming from Houston, and then where he fits, you know, is, what happens?
Whose spot does he take? Especially because you still have all three of your starting outfielders are still either in arbitration or under contract. Because is he going to take Grisham's job and just won the Gold Glove and is an up and comer at 23? He'll be in his age 24.
I would
season?
Think not.
No. Is he going to take Will Myers' spot the way that Will played this year? And I cannot believe I'm actually saying this, but you know, yeah, probably, maybe, I don't know. And then Tommy Pham out in left field. Is he going to, you know, be able to move one of those guys? And this is where I'll kind of dovetail off of what you said. It depends on if there's going to have a DH or not, right? Because if there's going to be a DH, sure, by all means, go out and grab a guy like George Springer, because it frees up some of these other guys to just play DH, you know, a few times a week. You know, go out and grab him. And that actually brings me to the next guy that I was looking at. And he had a really not great year this year. But I think it was an anomaly. If you're going to have a DH, go out and get Carlos Santana from the Indians.
Yeah.
He's a free agent. He's just coming off a 3-year, $60 million deal. Just hit $199. He's not going to get that kind of cash again, at least not on this contract. He's only 30, he's going to be 35 years old. Led the American League in walks last year. He's one of those high on-base percentage kind of guys, right? 350 OBP. His slugging percentage and his on-base percentage were identical. So you know the pop is going to return for this guy. I don't know what happened, but if you can go out and get him on a deal, like, again, one of those shorter, yeah, we've seen what you do, but we want to make sure that time hasn't caught up to you type of deals, go out and get a guy like that, because, man, you want to talk about adding some more thunder to the lineup, that's a dude who adds some serious thunder to that lineup. And that, so, I call that a hard exit velocity 113 off the wall, but it's only a single because it got hit so hard.
So a buy low situation as opposed to a Nelson Cruz who has done it and might demand a little bit more, but obviously has a few more years on him as well.
Correct.
The guy that I, you know, if we're ranking these guys, I would put him ahead of Springer. And since you set the parameters as, you know, there being a DH in 2021, if you can make the money work, Marcelo Ozuna had another heck of a season.
Yes, he did. And you're making the Braves weaker by doing that too.
Yeah, 338, 18 homers, 56 RBIs, 106.7 OPS. You talk about adding some more firepower to the lineup. He would certainly do that. And, you know, I think his numbers wise better than Springer this year. And I think there's been a number of seasons where he's had the edge offensively. You might, again, with the DH situation, might not necessarily need him in the outfield. You never know with AJ Preller. If there's another trade, you know, in the works with the corner outfielder, the guy won a gold glove as recently as 3 years ago, for what it's worth. And also from the Dominican, as is Fernando Tatis Jr. You know,
you want to up the celebration down the line after a home run game. That's the guy you go and get.
I want to further disturb the guy that voted Tatis 10th in his ballot. I want him to get angrier and angrier when he watches the most fun team in baseball. I mean, Ozuna, he took the selfie right during the postseason.
Yep. Yes, he did.
He was going around first base. So I think personality wise, that was kind of one of the things I had against Springer, which might not, you know, maybe that wouldn't be an issue at all. Probably wouldn't. But Ozuna seems like a guy that would fit right in and just kind of add to the swagger and the excitement that we already see with this club. And like you mentioned, I mean, taking him away from, you know, another one of the best teams in the National League isn't a bad thing either. But then just based on looking at his offensive output this season, you had that, add something like that to the lineup, you're in a good spot.
All right, then I got my pipe dream, right? The one that's like, this is never going to happen, but what if it happened and it would be flipping awesome? You don't know what's going on right now with Luis Camposano. You're probably not going to re-sign Jason Castro unless...
I think I know where you're going with this.
Luis Camposano is not going to be available. Just declined a qualifying offer from Philly. The Padres tried to trade for him just a couple of years ago. How about 30-year-old JT Realmuto?
Mm-hmm.
That would be a grand slam to me. Because as much as we love Austin Nola, as much as he came in here and did a fantastic job, I would have no problem with him being my backup catcher. If you can go out and get a dude who is the best two-way backstop in the game, he's going to be expensive. He's going to be very expensive. But, man, that would be the – you add that to that. There is now officially, again – given if there is a DH, there is now officially nowhere for you to hide in the Padres lineup. You 1 through 11, they have a chance to hurt you. There's so much length and depth to that lineup. If you get a guy like that, the opposing pitcher is looking at it like, holy, where can I relax? You can't relax anywhere when you're facing that lineup. That would be like the number one, like the offensive version of getting Trevor Bauer of this is the no brainer. This is the slam. You go and get him. JT Realmuto is the guy.
Well, and what that does too is, I mean, there are so many trades made at the deadline. If I can remember them chronologically, they made the Mariners trade before they made the Clevinger deal, right? And so they added another catcher in Austin Nola, which made, and they might have even had Castro at that point, which made Austin Hedges expendable. It's a situation like that where if you bring in Realmuto and maybe you sign Castro again, maybe you believe Campusano can be your backup, then you've got a guy that you have under team control and Austin Nola, who's done some good things for a couple seasons, that you can say, maybe we can add another bullpen arm. Maybe that's how we get another starting pitcher. Maybe you address a need elsewhere by bringing in a high ticket free agent like that makes somebody like Nola expendable and allows you to go in and acquire more talent at a position of need. We know Prowler loves flexibility. We know he loves depth, anything that gives him another piece to play with. And I think there's a lot of situations like this, you know, we mentioned with the outfielders. If you bring in, you know, Ozuna or Springer, you know, maybe you feel like, you know, Tommy Pham, you know, we believe in him, but we also think we can get something good for him. People have discussed the whole Will Myers scenario. A flip side of last year, now that he's proven something, is his value as high as it'll ever be. And so you can never put that type of a mindset or approach past somebody like AJ Preller when you're considering the moves and the domino effects that they could have.
And we know how much he likes to have strength up the middle. He builds up its catcher, pitcher, short, second, center field. He has been working those since he got here. If you're strong up the middle, you're going to be okay. And adding those types of guys makes you incredibly strong up the middle.
No doubt. You guys, was that your peak, right? That was the last one.
That was the peak. But I did have one other one that I was going to like. Yeah, do I throw this out there? Why not? And I'm thinking, you know what? There's like, you need some infield depth, right? Like, you need that guy who can kind of play everywhere on the infield. How about Andrelton Simmons?
Okay.
I mean, best defensive shortstop in the game right now, arguably. If you go out and get a dude like that, he's not going to take the starting spot from Fernando Tatis Jr. He's a guy who's a rotational guy. I don't even know if he plays multiple positions. I have absolutely no clue. But if you want a guy who can come in, and again, if there's a DH, and spell Tatis and give him a few days to make sure, you know, he's still staying healthy. And we talked about it last week. You start moving guys around the infield. You know, you can start having him playing. One guy DHs, next guy gets to move over to second today, over to third today, and this dude's a short, and this dude's a first. You can move him all over the place. I'm just kind of thinking if you want to be very good and strong up the middle, especially defensively, you could do a lot worse than adding a guy like that, even if it is for one of those, you know, late inning defensive replacement type things. Now, he's only 31 and he's going to get a bigger contract somewhere else. But that's one of those I would keep in the back of my head as a, you know what, if you have a chance to go and add him, maybe the market never develops for him. Kick the tires and send a call up to the agent and say, you know what, how about coming down to San Diego? We know we have a superstar, a potential future Hall of Famer here already, but we want to somehow find a way to work him in somewhere, especially if you're not able to bring back Jurickson and Profar.
Well, and that's, you took the words out of my mouth. If Profar walks, then he's a guy that can step in, and Profar did so many good things for them this year, and his versatility. Again, like you said, we don't necessarily know that Simmons can play the role in that same way, but at least in the infield, give them some options. So I like that. I always have Twitter open when we're doing this, just in case something interesting happens, and I don't think it's ever actually happened when we've done this podcast, but I just saw a tweet. Mike Clevinger and the San Diego Padres, this is from Robert Murray, are working toward a 2-year deal. According to league sources, it would buy out the final 2 years of arbitration for Clevinger, who will become a free agent in 2022. So it's not like it's a long-term deal, but just to kind of sew things up for, I guess, the remaining time he would be on club control.
I like it. Show a little loyalty from both sides. Not have to worry about the negotiation. Go through negotiations once. You don't have to worry about it next year. I like that. I like that approach. I'm wondering why it's only the 2 years of arbitration, maybe not going into a third for his first year of free agency. Cause then both guys are gambling at that point. Right. I mean, the Padres are gambling that they're going to be able to re-sign him, and he's kind of gambling that he'll be able to put together enough of a resume in the next 2 years to be able to land a giant free agent contract when that is up. I like it. There's a little bit of it's motivation for both sides, I think, moving forward. That's a solid idea.
Well, Sunshine's about to see his buddy Trevor Bauer cash out. So my guess is he likes the idea of that, likes the sound of that. And in the current market, given the 2020 season and the financial implications for baseball, you figure or hope with some normalcy in a couple years from now, you might be able to get a little bit more out of a longer term deal than he could now. Maybe, I don't know.
You know, you also figure that also does give you a very good indication of how much he enjoyed being in San Diego. Because if he's willing to do that, because if you do a 2-year deal that is, what, you know, $10 million a year, and you go out and your lights out, you win a Cy Young Award this year, which he has the talent to do, you're giving up money in arbitration for the second year. So he obviously does really enjoy being here.
I mean, if for whatever reason he's feeling stir crazy, just take him down to OB and I think he'll just kind of click right in that San Diego is the place for him. Hang out with Tony Hawk some more.
Oh yeah, let's go up to North County, man. I'll show you where Tony likes to get his coffee.
Cool. This was fun. It was good to have an excuse to take a closer look at the free agent market. Cause you hear about, you know, obviously the big name guys like Springer, like Trevor Bauer, like Realmuto. But to look at the guys down the line that maybe the Padres are more likely to go after, after spending as much as they have the last couple few seasons and not having the enormous holes to fill necessarily. Curious to see what their approach will be, how aggressive they'll be in the free agent market. And is it those grand slam three run homer type guys or kind of the infield single types that they target in the coming months?
We are going to find out hopefully soon. Although we've seen how we see how the off season typically goes, and it's usually the last couple of years at least kind of been a little bit slow to get moving. You know, a couple of big name guys will fly off the board early, but it's a little bit it has to take a little time to develop, if you will, kind of like a flea flicker. You know, it takes a while for that play to develop, and you hope it doesn't take too long. But we're going to start seeing at least hearing the rumor mill on who's calling who and who's talking to whom. And we're always going to hear it too. Every single time there's anybody of note, you know that AJ will be making a call. And then we're all going to get, excited and start jumping around. They're going to land Realmuto. It's like, well, maybe he's just doing his due diligence because he calls on everybody. We already know that. So we'll see. But it's going to be exciting. And what's really cool is, it's going to be exciting because now, as we've talked about, we're not going into a year thinking, man, how are we going to fill this massive hole? Now we're going into a season thinking, man, how do we make a really good club even better? And that's such a foreign place for Padres fans to be. It's actually really, really nice.
In the words of Jace Tingler, AJ doesn't sleep. So you would expect no less, and you're right, so much more optimistic and promising a position that they're in now than they were a year ago. The shame of it is I had so much fun at the winter meetings, with them being in San Diego this year, the idea of a virtual winter meeting is just not as exciting when it gets to that part of December, and you understand why they got to do it that way. But that was a fun few days. My first experience doing that. I know you've done your share, and will be a shame not to be able to experience kind of that energy and kind of be in the mix the way you are at that event.
Oh yeah. It's really cool just to walk around and you sit around and talk, pick people's brains, man. You get a lot of access to figure out what's going on, what people are thinking, what people are doing. Major League Baseball, actually, that as bad as they run things, usually they do a pretty good job with making sure that you get a lot of players coming in and talking about the season and just being accessible. And they're able to show off a lot of their programs you usually get to talk about during the year. So it's a nice event to go out there and get for baseball fans, because you're just inundated with all things that are in the game. And you're right, it's going to be very different having to do it all virtually. But, you know, in today's day and age, you got to do what you got to do.
We're used to it by now. That's 2020. Heck, we're doing this podcast over Zoom. It's just the way it's gone.
This is true. But hey, hope is maybe by this time next year. Darn it. This time next year, right after we go and cover the Padres victory parade, and because we're rolling down Harbor there all the way to Petco Park with the first, world championship in San Diego major sports history, then we'll be able to go to the winter meetings again.
And celebrate Fernando Tatis Jr. as the National League MVP.
Yeah, unless that one moron puts him 15th this time after he hits 48 bombs.
All right, thanks, Derek.
All right, dude, talk to you soon.
Yep.